Hello, this is the bit before the theme music. Isn't it nice? Do you like it? I like it. I like you. Do you like it? Do you? Whatever. Run the theme music.
What's this? What's this?
It's the most wonderful time of the year.
What's this? What's this?
It's Christmas time.
What's this? What's this?
It's all humbug, I tell you!
What's this? What's this?
Well, says he, my trusty old Red Ryder carbine action 2 on the shot range model air rifle.
What is this?
It's the Total Christmas Podcast with your host, Jack.
He's an angry elf.
Hello, you beautiful people, and welcome to the Total Christmas Podcast. I'm your host, Jack. Do you want to do the interactive bit? No? Fine. So, I'm away with the family, so I'm recording this a lot earlier than I normally would. I've had to rush it through a little bit. What I'm saying is, it's going to be a crap episode, but you're beautiful and you're going to enjoy it. Or not, I don't know. So, yeah, I don't think I've got much housekeeping, have I? Let me just rack my tiny little pea brain. Nothing springs to mind. It's only been a few days since I recorded the last episode because I'm going away, like I've already told you. Not that I'm bragging. We're not going anywhere special. Don't get excited. So, yeah, I guess we'll start with this.
Humbug.
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 Humbug. Bah humbug.
It's all humbug, I tell you.
Christmas a humbug, Uncle. Oh, you don't mean that, surely.
Boys and girls, this episode's version of A Christmas Carol is an episode of the NBC radio show, The Six Shooter. Now, you're probably not familiar with The Six Shooter, but you'll definitely be familiar with the star of the show. It was Jimmy Stewart. Yeah, he played The Six Shooter. Well, the character's name was actually Britt Ponsett, and he was called The Six Shooter because the deal was he could get off six shots before your average man could only get off one. So it was created by Frank Burr, and he wrote a lot of the episodes, and it ran from September the 20th, 1953, till June the 24th, 1954. So nearly a whole year, actually, but that was one season of 39 episodes, and Jimmy Stewart was like a drifting cowboy in the final years of the Wild West, and he'd sort of get into various adventures each episode. And one of those episodes was called Britt Ponsett's Christmas Carol. So I'm going to run through how it goes, and it starts off with an advert, and this is for an NBC radio set, and this is the bit that got me. Have a listen to this at the end.
Bacon sizzling, coffee perking, dishes clinking, and if you're lucky, a new sound. NBC radio listening on that new set. The perfect gift to lighten mother's long hours in the kitchen.
That's got to be from the 50s, that is, isn't it? You know, your mum in the kitchen. That's where she belongs, but give her a radio to keep her company. Goodness me. Wow, sexism, eh? Glorious. So the episode starts with the regular introduction, and I want to play a bit of it for you, because it's really cool. Have a listen to this.
The man in the saddle is angular and long-legged. His skin is sun-dyed brown. The gun in his holster is gray steel and rainbow mother of pearl, its handle unmarked. People call them both the Six Shooter. The NBC Radio Network presents James Stewart as the Six Shooter, a transcribed series of radio dramas based on the life of Britt Ponsett, the Texas plainsman who wandered through the Western territories, leaving behind a trail of still remembered legends.
And then the narrator steps in and he explains that it's a cold winter's morning. Not really cold. Not really, really cold, but a bit cold. It's December. And a young boy approaches a man who sat by a campfire. Now, the kid tells him straight away that he's running away from home, and Britt is like, what, you're running away at Christmas? And the kid's like, oh, I don't believe in Christmas. Christmas is awful. My parents have died, and I don't even want... Actually, listen to this. I'm not going to say it. Let him say it.
Is it getting presents made any difference? As if I really cared about that knife.
Well, is that what you wanted? A pocket knife?
I don't want a knife. I don't want anything.
Yeah, I don't even want a knife. What knife? I didn't mention a knife. No, I mentioned a knife. Who's talking about knives? Why are you mentioning knives? I don't want one anyway. I didn't say you did want one. Well, I don't. I don't want one. Okay, you don't want a knife. We'll make a note of that. Is it okay if I call that Chekhov's pocket knife? Yeah. So then Britt remembers a story about someone else who didn't like Christmas. And then we get the story within a story. And pretty much it's Britt telling a Western version of A Christmas Carol. And the story is about a man called Eben, who also hated Christmas. He was the richest man in the territory. He had four ranches and a bank or two, and he lived in a room in one of his hotels. And he gets a visit from his nephew. They don't say his name, actually. We don't know his name's Fred. I'm guessing it's Fred, but we don't get his name. And he comes in, and it's the usual bit. You want to come for dinner? No, I don't want to come for dinner. But instead of saying humbug, he says this.
Christmas fiddlesticks.
Yeah. Says it twice. We only get two, not as many as you would if it was a humbug, but you still get two fiddlesticks. And then the foreman from his ranch comes in, and Scrooge mentions a cabin that he's built on the range, and he's like, yeah, well, you know, we needed to build somewhere to live. And Scrooge is like, yeah, but you can't be building properties on my land. That's my land. I'm not having nesters coming into my land. I want you to tear it down. Tear it down tomorrow. And his foreman, whose name we don't get as well, but I'm guessing it might be Bob Cratchit, he's like, tomorrow's Christmas. And Scrooge's like, I don't care. Tear it down. You ain't having that shack. And the foreman's like, okay, sounds fair. Well, he doesn't actually say that, but you get the idea. Anyway, then Scrooge goes to bed, and instead of seeing a face on the door knocker, he sees a face in his glowing lamp. And he recognises the face as his mate, old Jake. And he drops the lamp, but instead of the light going out, there's still a ghostly light in the room, and there is old Jake. And the narrator says he's been dead for over 7 years, and that annoyed me. It's not over 7 years, it's just 7 years. It's 7 years to the day, okay? You should know that. Anyway, Jake is a ghost now, and instead of being wrapped in chains, he's wearing a saddle, and the saddlebags are just chock full of gold nuggets and land grants and deeds and that sort of stuff. And he tells Scrooge, no, you're going to be haunted by a ghost. Doesn't say ghosts, doesn't say three ghosts. He says a ghost. And he says it's coming at 1 o'clock. Yeah. And then Jake leaves, and Scrooge finds a gold nugget on the floor. And this is really badly done, because it's just after he's gone, right? Scrooge finds the gold nugget on the floor, and then the narrator says, and Scrooge remembered that Jake had gold nuggets in his saddlebag. He's like, what do you mean remembered? It was seconds ago. It was seconds ago. What, this was, oh yeah, look, he's dropped a blooming nugget. Nice. I'll be like, cool, put that in my pocket. So he didn't imagine the whole affair. Then we get an interruption in the broadcast where the announcer wishes us all a Merry Christmas. Thanks for that. And he lets us know that next episode's going to be on the 31st of December. Okay, got that? Cool. Then the ghost turns up and it says he's a young fella, aged 18 or 19, all dudeed up. I like the way he uses that term, dudeed up. Yeah, in his cowboy gear, looking pretty smart. And the ghost takes Scrooge back in time to a snow-covered prairie where a bunch of wagons have circled, and there's an old man reading a Christmas reading from the Bible. And there is a young boy looking all sad. And it turns out this is just after his mum was killed by a stampede of oxen, and his dad was killed with an Apache arrow in his chest. Yeah, so he's not too happy. Not the best Christmas he's ever had, as I'm sure you could imagine. So Scrooge is like, I don't want to be here. I don't want to watch this. This is awful. Come on. So then they take him to a bunkhouse, which is like 10 years later. And Jake comes running in and says, come on, the boss is having a party. Let's go. And they have a party. And it's great. Very happy. Kind of like Fezziwigs, but they don't mention Fezziwig. And while they're watching the party, Eben is like, ooh, I wish I could speak to my foreman right about now. Yeah, he's having a change of heart already. That's nice, that's nice. So then the narrator says he saw other Christmases. None were very happy, especially this one. So we don't know anything about the other unhappy Christmases. Anyway, there's a young school mum, and Eben gives her a small gift, and she opens it up, and she says, I'm sorry, Eben, I can't take this ring. But we find out her name is Belle, because Eben does call her Belle. And she says, you know what she says. We're all familiar. But it's not like the text from the book. They've hardly touched the text from the book at all, actually, which I don't mind. If it's set in Victorian times, I really appreciate it when they use the text from the book. When it's set in the Wild West, then even though this is not that long after, I suppose, the Wild West was what? The last 3 or 4 decades of the 18th century? So, yeah, it would have been like, you know, sort of 30 or 40 years after the book was written. Anyway, Belle doesn't want to know. And Eben says, right, no more, take me home. And they're back in his hotel room. Then the ghost transforms into the ghost of Christmas present. So it's still the ghost, but it says like his waist got bigger and he had like lines on his face, but he looked very jovial, which I kind of didn't dislike. I didn't love it, but I didn't mind it. We get two scenes with this one. The first one, he goes to the foreman's cabin and he's got five or six kids and the mum's there making dinner. And the mum's like, oh, what did... Actually, let me play the bit because she knows that the foreman had to go and see Eben.
By the way, what did he want with you yesterday? Was it about this cabin?
Hmm? Yeah. Oh, no, of course not. Well, let's get on with dinner. Sit down, everybody. Now, where's my Jim, huh?
Yeah, and I kind of like that. So, you know, he knew that they had to tear down their house, but he didn't want to spoil Christmas. So I thought it was kind of interesting. And then we meet Timmy, tiny Timmy, and he's got an iron brace and a crutch. And the foreman blesses the food and blesses the family and even blesses Eben. And tiny Tim says, God bless us, everyone. Here he is.
God bless us, everyone.
And then we cut to the nephew's house. This is a very short scene. Instead of playing the games we're used to, like in the book, they're playing pin the tail on the donkey. But the difference is, the donkey is drawn to look like his Uncle Eben. And this woman's trying to stick a pin in the donkey's backside. And then they cut from that bit. And we get the Ghost of Christmas Future. Now at this point, Ghost of Christmas Yet to Come. Now at this point, there's no description. So we don't see if the ghost looks skinnier and hooded or anything, but we do hear its voice. You know, normally you wouldn't hear anything from the Ghost of Christmas Yet to Come. Well, we actually do hear something. And there's a couple of blokes standing in the street talking about someone dying. I'll play it for you. Have a listen.
Oh, he's dead, all right. Dead as a doornail. Sure is a Christmas present I never expected. At least whoever handles his property won't be as hard to deal with as he was. Wonder if they'll bother giving him a funeral.
And then we get a woman talking to her husband, but annoyingly, I listened to it over and over, I couldn't make out what she was saying. At the very end, she says, I used to be very fond of him, but I don't know what she said before that. Like, what happened to him? Do you know, I'll tell you what, I'll play it, see if you can decipher it. Have a listen to this.
To me, he's been dead for years. Well, I haven't even thought of him since I don't know when. And yet, you know, once I was real fond of him.
So I'm not quite sure what she was saying there, but we obviously know that was Belle. And Scrooge goes, who is this that woman I used to know is talking about? I found that quite funny. It's like that woman I used to know. And then the ghost points to a tombstone. And on the tombstone is the name Ebenezer Scrooge. And that's the first and only time that he's referred to as Ebenezer. Yeah. So then he wakes up in the hotel. He gets dressed and he runs to the store. The store is closed because it's Christmas Day. But he owns the building the store is in. So he wakes up the store bloke and says, send a turkey and a ham to this cabin out on my land. And there's actually, no, send them two hams. Overly generous, isn't he? There's eight of them there. Six kids, two grown-ups, eight of them. Two hams and a turkey. That's not bad. They're going to have a nice old meal. And then he goes off to his nephew's, and apparently he's the life of the party, and he insists that they play Pin the Tail on the Donkey with the picture of him as... Have a listen. Have a listen.
He insisted that they use that donkey with his face on it when they play a game, you know.
Because that's what I've been all these years. A real four-footed, long-eared donkey.
So the next day, he heads out to the cabin to see his foreman, and we find out that his name is Robert, or Bob for short, and he does the whole, I'm not going to put up with it, have a listen.
I'm not putting up with your shenanigans any longer, young fella.
But please,
that cabin's coming down and no buts about it. And then we're building a new ranch house in its place. Big enough for you and your whole family.
What?
Oh, yes. I'm also doubling your wages as of last week. Merry Christmas, Bob.
Yeah, and I really like that. I like the fact he says, I want you to tear it down and then rebuild it. I love that. And at the end, Scrooge says, oh, I'll play it again.
And as your son says, God bless everyone.
There you go. So then, that's the end of the story within the story. We cut back to Jimmy Stewart, or Britt Ponsett, and the kid, Johnny. And the kid is like, oh, well, maybe I shouldn't hate Christmas so much. I wish I had a gift to give to my aunt. And Britt is like, well, you know, you'd have to buy her something. You could maybe cut down that little spruce over there and take a Christmas tree back home. And then Britt says, it's a nice bit actually, Britt's like, you know Jim Bender and his three daughters that live in the town? That's where I'm going to spend Christmas. And the kid goes, oh no, he's only got two daughters. And Britt's like, oh, well in that case I guess I've got a spare present. And the kid's like, I don't want you to give me anything. And Britt's like, well no, if you could show me the way into town, along the trail, then I could pay you back by giving you this red bonnet with feathers in it. And you could give that to your auntie. And he's like, oh, that sounds like a fair deal. So that's what they do. And Johnny shows him the trail, and he gets the red bonnet. And they go to see his auntie, and she says this.
I just went for a little ride, Aunt Millie, to get us a Christmas tree, see?
Christmas tree? Fiddlesticks.
Yeah, fiddlesticks. You see, it's a bit of a callback, isn't it? Instead of humbug. And then Britt, just before he's leaving, he gives her this pocket knife, and he says, you know, give that to Johnny. And that's pretty much it. Yeah. And I quite liked it. I do like the old time radio, and I've always been a massive fan of westerns and that. So yeah, this was a good one. I think you should check it out. The ending, at the very end, the announcer says, Jimmy Stewart is performing in the Glenn Miller story. So that was about the, well, that was the time when one of Jimmy Stewart's biggest films, the Glenn Miller story, came out. Now, just before we finish up, I just want to say, this show, The Six Shooter, Jimmy Stewart actually did film a TV pilot for it, but it was never picked up. But then, when there was more interest in it, a few years later, Jimmy Stewart, his career had picked up with the movies, because he did have a bit of a post-war slump, but his career was back on top, and so they decided to make it in 1957, starring a guy called John Payne. And they changed the name from The Six Shooter to The Restless Gun, and they changed his character's name as well from Britt Ponsett to Vint Bonner. Thought that was interesting as well. Now, a few years later, this episode was actually filmed and directed by Jimmy Stewart for the General Electric Theatre. And I've tried to watch that online, but I couldn't find it anywhere. So I'm hoping, maybe at a later date, I'll be able to do that. But right now, I can't. But that's the funny thing, is because that's how I found this. Originally, I found the other one. I was reading about it, but couldn't find it. It was called The Christmas Trail, the episode was. I couldn't find it, but then I found the radio show that that was based on. And that's what I did. And if you want to listen to it, it's on YouTube. Check it out. The Six Shooter, Britt Ponsett's A Christmas Carol. You wouldn't have any trouble finding it. And I think you'll enjoy it. Now we're doing this.
Do you hear what I hear?
Do you hear what I hear?
You know, sometimes there's nothing better than a hot bath. It is just so hard to drink in the shower. So another mini holiday debate is whether the Harry Potter books and movies constitute a Christmas franchise. I mean, they feature festive scenes and incorporate Christmas celebrations at Hogwarts with feasts, snow decorations, and gift giving. The movies, especially the first one, have a Christmassy feeling, and they are all full of warmth, wonder, and nostalgia. They are also a popular viewing choice for many people to watch during the holiday season. In fact, some make it a tradition to watch them every year. Now me, my controversy is not whether Harry Potter is a Christmas-themed series. I mean, it is, as it evokes a strong sense of holiday cheer. My hang-up is much smaller, and it set my Do You Hear What I Hear alarm not really ringing, but more like a buzzing, like with your phone. I mean, this is a subtle distinction, but it still stands out to my ear, like a hiccup in a song. You see, when Harry finally gets to go to Hogsmeade and he visits Honeydukes, it is described as a sweet shop, and all of the candy in it, the chocolate frogs, the every flavor beans, the mints, the gum, the toffees, these are all referred to as sweets. For the Brits, sweets can refer to candy or desserts. However, in the US, the items at Honeydukes, they would just be called candy. The word candy in the States refers to the full variety of any sugary treats, whereas in the UK, the word sweets is used in the same way. It's gentle, it's classy, it's British. In America, we go to a candy store, or we look in the candy aisle, and our candy can be made from chocolate, nuts, toffee, whatever. It has led to the common saying to be like a kid in a candy store, which means to be really excited or happy because of some external stimulus. Now, it is not like Americans don't use the word sweets, However, when we make the statement that we are getting healthy and trying to cut down on sweets, it is in reference to those high-calorie baked goods, like cookies, donuts, cakes, or even ice cream, just not candy. Now, it is argued that this difference in use results from the origin of the term sweets in Britain. It is the shortened version of the Old English word sweetmeat. This expression was in common use for more than 400 years before the birth of America. I mean, it may not be obsolete, but it is a word that is rarely heard now. The suffix in it, meat, does not have the same meaning it does today. It has an archaic definition, like when it is used in the phrase meat and drink. Meat here means food, and food in its widest sense, not just the flesh of animals. So sweet meat simply means sweet food. For a medieval Englishman, sweetmeats would be any sugary foods, like candied fruits, sugar-covered nuts and spices, and dishes which used sugar as an ingredient. The term even made it into Shakespeare's Romeo and Juliet, as he described, "Their breaths with sweetmeats tainted are." Whatever it's called, know that I am united in one international goal: to eat it. So just hand me a gummy bear and I'll be quiet. Cheers and happy Christmas.
Here's the thing, I have recorded this bit before Bob sent me that bit. So let me just say, what a great segment. That was really good. Well done, Bob. He's done a great job again. He always does a great job. Thanks, Bob. He'll be back in a bit. Now we're doing this. Okay, boys and girls, I don't want to do it. You don't want to listen to it. It's happening. It's happening. What do you get if you cross a piece of rope and the 24th of December? The knot before Christmas. Goodness. This is the quiz. This is the quiz. This is the quiz. This is the quiz. Boys and girls, here it is, the highlight of the show. Let me start by doing last week's scores. With only 4 points, 4 points, was Brighton Rock. With 5 points was John Gomez, and she said it herself, a measly 5, Pamela Wootton. With 6 points we have Guy Sawyer, Mary Pulte, my dear friend Shelley Arnold, Jack Unverfurth, and Martin Goodman. Martin, you could do so much better, Martin. With 7 points, Mike Westphal. He normally does so much better as well. He's normally like a 10 or a 9. And with 8 points, Adam Parker and Nicola McLean. Yeah, or McLean, I've forgotten which one it is. She did correct me one time. So sorry about that, Nicola McLean. Or sorry, Nicola McLean. I'm sorry to both of you, or one of you, or either of you, or neither of you. I'm sorry. Also, do you remember last week I gave a shout out to my lovely listener, Chris Kuhn? Yeah, well, she scored. Now, she asked me not to mention it. I'm mentioning it. I can't keep a secret. That's the kind of guy I am. She got 1 point. And I've been through the quiz from last episode. And I'd love to know which question she got right. She didn't manage any of the other... I'm sorry about that, Chris. I'm not that sorry, because other people did all right. They didn't do great, but they did all right. I'm a bit concerned about this one, to be honest. But fingers crossed we do a little bit better. All of you. I'm the only one who got 10. I didn't get 10, did I? I got 9. I got one wrong, didn't I? Okay, anyway, this is this week's quiz. So just a little update. I don't know if you care, but the first couple of questions are from the Christmas TV section of my quiz book. Then the next bunch are all about Christmas number ones. They're Christmas number ones mainly in the UK, but I've tried to pick ones that people all around the world should know. And then the last three questions are about Christmas carols. Okay? Right then. Right, here we go. Question number one. What long-running American series began with the TV movie The Homecoming, A Christmas Story? Okay, what was that? Answer me. Question number two. Oh, this connects to one of the questions from last episode. What type of dog is Santa's little helper in The Simpsons? He first appeared in the first ever episode. Well, they all first appeared in the first ever episode, but that's when they got the dog, is in that episode. Okay, question number three. Fill in the blank. Harry Belafonte's Christmas hit, Mary's Boy Blank. What's that one then? Mary's Boy Blank. Next one. Who were the two guest singers on Lad Baby's 2021 Christmas chart topper? Now, Lad Baby in the UK, he had over four, I think it was five actually, five Christmas number ones on the bounce. To be honest, by the end of it, everyone was getting a bit sick of him. But not everyone, because people were still bloody buying his songs. And usually his songs would be about sausage rolls. They were all for a good cause, though. They were all for charity. So, you know, there is that. But let me give you a clue with this one, because it's a bit tricky if you're not in the UK. These two singers had a number one the week before with another Christmas song, okay? 2021, big Christmas song. From 2021, okay? Hopefully that helps a bit. Okay, next one. Which of these was not a Christmas number one for the Beatles? Is it A, Day Tripper, B, Eleanor Rigby, C, I Feel Fine, or D, I Want to Hold Your Hand? Which one of those wasn't a Christmas number one? None of them are Christmassy, are they? But you know, they were Christmas number ones. Three of them were. One wasn't. Which one was it? Answer the question. Question number five. Where was Jimmy Osmond's Long-Haired Lover from? Now, I know that's another song that A, isn't Christmassy, and B, I don't know if it was a hit anywhere other than the UK. But Jimmy Osmond, he's not from the UK, is he? He's from the Osmond Brothers, and it was a Christmas number one, and it was a bit of a novelty song. So, you know, I don't know. Maybe you get it. I don't know. Don't give me a hard time if you don't get it. I know it. Nice. Okay, next one. Look, again, this might be a bit Brit-centric, but I know this was a big hit in other countries, not just the UK, okay? Who did Robbie Williams duet with in 2001 to reach the top of the Christmas chart? Now, I'm going to tell you the title of the song. It was Something Stupid, and then I go and spoil it all by saying something stupid like I love you. And I'll also tell you she's a very famous actress, okay? A Hollywood actress. She's in Hollywood movies. She's not from Hollywood. Right, that's all you're getting though. Next one. Easy one. What do they deck the halls with? Easy one, wasn't it? Don't forget, this is about Christmas carols, these ones now. Next one. According to the 2021 poll, what is the UK's favourite Christmas carol? I'm going to give you four to choose from. Is it Hark the Herald Angels Sing, O Come All Ye Faithful, Away in a Manger, or O Holy Night? Okay, bit of a guess for you there. I got it right, just so you know. And next one, where was O Little Town of Bethlehem written? Was it in Germany, the UK, or the USA? Which country? Okay. Right, now they might have been a bit tricky, but it's all just a bit of fun. Your life doesn't depend on this quiz. Well, I say that, I don't know. I don't know what you're up to. Maybe your life does depend on this quiz, but I hope it doesn't. Here come your answers, kids. What long-running American series began with the TV movie The Homecoming, A Christmas Story? Do you know what? I had two in my brain for this, and I chose the wrong one. I went with Little House on the Prairie. Yeah, but the correct answer was The Waltons. Yeah. Right. Question number two. What type of dog is Santa's little helper in The Simpsons? Well, in the first ever episode of The Simpsons, Homer puts all his money on Santa's little helper to win at the dog races. It is, of course, a greyhound. Yeah. Question number three. Fill in the blank. Harry Belafonte's Christmas hit is Mary's Boy Child. Mary's boy child, Jesus Christ, was born on Christmas Day. Question number whatever. Who were the two guest singers on Lad Baby's 2021 Christmas chart topper? Now, I believe the song is called Sausage Rolls for Everyone. Yeah, well done, Lad Baby, singing about sausage rolls. Never been so impressed. And the two singers were Elton John and Ed Sheeran. Yeah, and the week before this one got to number one, they were at number one with Merry Christmas, Everyone. Yeah, you know the one? Merry Christmas, everyone. Oh, that's all you're getting. Yeah, that was the one. Okay, next question. Which of these was not a Christmas number one for the Beatles? I can tell you it was B, Eleanor Rigby. Yeah, I got that right. Proud of myself. Now, where was Jimmy Osmond's Long-Haired Lover from? Well, I'm pretty sure this was Beatles related, you see. So he was singing about his long-haired lover from Liverpool. I'll be your long-haired lover from Liverpool. Something like that. I'm not a massive fan of the song, personally. But yeah, it was the Christmas number one 1 year in the UK. Congratulations, Jimmy Osmond. Right. Whom did Robbie Williams duet with in 2001 to reach the top of the Christmas chart? It was number one for like 4 or 5 weeks. It was Nicole Kidman. Yeah, Robbie Williams and Nicole Kidman. He had a swing album out called Swing When You're Winning, and it was all like swing covers. And that was one of them. Got to number one. Yeah. Next question. What do they deck the halls with? Well, the answer is, of course, boughs of holly. Hope you got that one, because that's probably the easiest one out of the lot here. Okay, we're up to the ninth one now. A bit of a stab in the dark for you, this one, kids. What is our favourite Christmas carol here in the UK? Is it Hark the Herald Angels Sing, O Come All Ye Faithful, Away in a Manger, or O Holy Night? I can tell you it is O Holy Night, the stars are brightly shining. Yeah, I guessed at that. But I tell you what, it might be our favourite Christmas. I'm not sure if it is. I'm not sure if it's the most popular. Like, you don't hear it as often as you hear other ones. I like it very much. But in my experience, like, if you get carol singers, every year we go to like this pub near us and they have a big carol singing thing. Never sung O Holy Night there. It doesn't seem like choirs sing. It's more of a solo one. But yeah, anyway, that's our favourite, according to some poll. Who did this poll anyway? Was it some bloke in a pub? There's like four blokes there. Yeah, what's your favourite Christmas carol? I like Silent Night. I like O Holy Night. Yeah, I like that as well. 2 out of 3, they win the poll. Okay, last question. Where was O Little Town of Bethlehem written? Was it Germany, the UK, or the USA? It was the USA. Yeah. And I'll tell you what's interesting about that is in the USA, they sing it to a different tune than we do in the UK. Yeah. Do you want to hear the UK version? If you're in the UK, like, I know what it is, mate. But if you're not, it goes like this. O little town of Bethlehem, how still we see thee lie. Above thy deep and dreamless sleep, the silent stars go by. Yeah, that'll do. You heard enough of that. Voices of an angel. Voice of an angel. Yeah, so I thought that was written in the UK, so I got that wrong. And I also got the one wrong about the Waltons, so I got 8. I don't care what you scored, just let me know what you scored. Okay? I don't care. I'm not going to judge it. And when I say I'm not going to judge it, of course I'm going to judge it. It's impossible not to. But I'm not going to judge you harshly. I'm like, oh, wow, okay. You're an imbecile, that's fine. I don't mind. I know loads of people that are imbeciles and they're all right. Okay? So send me a score, you imbecile. Okay. Right. Well, that's the end of the quiz. I hope you enjoyed it. Let me give you the email address now. It's totalchristmas@gmail.com. If you've got nothing better to do, you can just put the number in. You don't even have to write an email. Most people don't. Most people just give me the number and then send it through. That's it. As the subject. You don't even have to put anybody in the email. Just send me the number. I don't care. Then I've got the answer. And then, next episode, you get to hear your name. And you're like, that's my name. Wow. Okay. Well, let's do something else. We're doing this.
Where are you, Christmas?
Where are you, Christmas? How about Vienna, Austria? Now, Vienna isn't like our other year-round Christmas locations. It only has one particular place that is festive all year. In the late 1800s, a young Viennese designer named Erwin Persie patented a design called the glass ball with snow effect, or Schneekugel, and he opened a business to make them in 1900. By the 1920s, Persie's snow globes were being exported to countries around the world. And today, along with the factory, there is a snow globe museum. In the exhibition space, you can view custom-made items, get an overview of snow globe production, see Persie's original workshop, and discover how the first snow globes came to life. They also display historical and current items related to snow globes. Snow globes are famous in Vienna and long associated with Christmas, so you don't want to miss out on this original museum. Now, while you're there in Vienna, you can also try some non-Christmas things. I mean, there are other Vienna must-dos,
like visiting the city's famed coffee houses, where everyone from Sigmund Freud to Karl Marx got their caffeine fix. They also have a giant Ferris wheel, which was built in 1897. And one of Vienna's most famous streets, Graben, is decked out with huge sparkling chandeliers. If you go there at Christmas time, it is one of the best things to see in Vienna because they had holiday lights too. Now, if you know of another festive location that'll make you flip and shake you up, you float it to Jack, he'll shovel it to me, and we'll tell you where to find Christmas throughout the year.
Again, I'm recording this bit before Bob had sent me that bit, so I've no idea where he was talking about in that segment, but it sounds like a really good place and we should all go there. Yeah, let's do that. If you're not listening to Bob's podcast, let me explain it to you. It's called Festive Foreign Film Fans. He talks about foreign festive films, and he's a fan of those films with his mate Mark. Check it out. It's really good. Now we're doing this. So boys and girls, this is Christmas all over the world, but it's just in Wales. So Wales, for me, is the same country, although it's sort of... Oh, the UK is an interesting one, isn't it? Because you've got England, Scotland, Wales and Northern Ireland. That's the United Kingdom, the UK, but we're sort of separate countries. I don't know how it works. It makes my brain hurt a little bit thinking about it. So it's sort of the same country, but it's a different country. If you've never been to Wales, it's glorious. Tom Jones comes from there, among other people. He's not the only one. He's not the only bloke that ever came from Wales. Richard Burton, Anthony Hopkins, Sean Connery. Not Sean Connery, he came from Scotland. But I bet he's been to Wales. Yeah. So I wanted to talk about a tradition that they have in some parts of Wales. Now, it has changed over the years. It's not quite what it used to be. But what it's called is, and I'm probably going to say this wrong, it's spelt P-L-Y-G-I-A-N, which I believe is Plygian. And it is a traditional Welsh Christmas service that takes place at 3 o'clock in the morning on Christmas Day. Yeah, 3 o'clock. And Plygian, it either comes from Pulicantio, which means when the cock crows at dawn, or it could come from Plyju, which is Latin, I believe, which means bending, as in to bend in prayer. I prefer the one when the cock crows at dawn, because the idea was, back in the day, they'd start the service at like 3 o'clock at night, and they would sing all the way until the cock crowed at dawn, or until the sun rose. Yeah, that was the thing. That's what they do. Now, here's the thing. Some places, it was like, it's from 3 o'clock till 6 o'clock, which is sort of when sun rises. It's not, though. In the middle of winter, in the UK, you're looking at it getting light at about 8 o'clock in the morning. So 3 o'clock till 6 o'clock doesn't really work. And also, some of the others said it starts at 3 to 6, meaning it starts at 3 o'clock, or it might start as late as 6 o'clock. So again, I don't know. This is one of those, I did a lot of research, lots of different websites I went to, but there was a lot of confliction in what they were saying. Anyway, let's just take from this what we can. Now, a Plygian carol is sung in Welsh, and they're different to normal carols because they include verses about the crucifixion and also about the resurrection. So it's kind of like a sermon in a song telling the whole story of Jesus's life. Now, Plygian was the only service held at night time. So people would come along and they'd all take candles down there, and there'd be like a huge procession through the village or through the town, everyone carrying a candle. And some of the people would go and knock on the priest's door with their candles and like, come on priest, it's time to go to church at 3 o'clock in the morning. And they'd all walk to the church, and then when they get there, they put their candles all around inside the church, like around the walls, and sometimes they'd have them on like poles as well, and like on the ends of the pews, on brass holders, so that it would light up the church, so that you could read your songbooks. And a lot of these candles, they'd all be decorated up, especially for the affair. Yeah, they'd like have like paper rings around them with decorations on. So the original services are recorded as far back as the 13th century, but it seems like they really grew in popularity from around the 16th century, but they kind of fell out of fashion again in the Victorian era, because this was when Christmas became more about being with your family rather than having a big old jolly and getting drunk. because a lot of people would just drink the night through. They wouldn't go to bed, so they'd be drinking all night, all the way through till 3 o'clock in the morning, and then they'd all go to church. And some of the parishes, they abandoned the practice after drunk villagers disrupted the service. So they're like, do you know what? If you're going to be like that, you've ruined it. You've ruined it. Forget it. Forget. No, we're not doing it anymore. No, you blew it. You blew it at the back. You've ruined it for everyone. This is why we can't have nice things. Which is a real shame, isn't it? A tradition gets completely forgotten about because some bloke got hammered one time and come in and was shouting at the back, I'm drunk, look at me. Yeah. So the songs themselves are often sung in 3 or 4 part harmonies and in small groups, but you'd also get people like in ones or twos, so you get solos, duets, trios, quartets. Yeah, and sometimes slightly larger groups, so it could just be like one person, but it could also be like in families. There's lots of different groups would all take it in turns to sing their carols, and it's a real no-no to repeat a song that had already been sung. So if you've been practicing your song in a group, you know, trying to get all the harmonies correct, you need to have a backup or two just in case when your turn came, the song you were going to sing had already been sung. Yeah, and that reminds me of when I used to do karaoke occasionally. I haven't done it in a few years, but I remember one time I got up and I stormed it with a version of Daydream Believer. I was fantastic. I'm not joking, I was fantastic. I was like, I am bigging myself up, but it was a good version, okay? Big round of applause, everyone loved it. But 4 songs later, some other geezer gets up and sings the same song, and it's like, what are you doing? Did he put that song in before I'd sung my version? And he's like, I can do better. Well, I can tell you now, he didn't, because my mate nudged me and said, he's crap compared to you. Yeah. And that happened another time at a pub when I got up and did a really good version of Suspicious Minds by Elvis. Glorious. It was, we're caught in a trap. This isn't Christmas related, I know, but I'm sharing with you. I'm sharing. And then about 5 songs later, these 2 drunk blokes get up. They were locals. I wasn't a local. They get up and they sing a drunk version of Suspicious Minds and bring the house down. I'm not bitter. I'm not bitter. Okay, I am bitter. Sorry, so where was I? Oh yeah, so back to this Pelagian thing. So what you get is, this service, you don't get a sermon, or if you do get a sermon, it'd be a very short one at the start. Probably the vicar wants to say something, doesn't he? He's got to say something. So he says something at the start, and then everyone sort of takes it in turns coming up. And they don't have like a list of like who's up next. People just walk up. It's like a really casual affair. So someone would walk up, sing their song. Could be, like I said, it could be a soloist, could be a duet, could be a group. And then they finish their song, go and sit down. Someone else walks up and they have a go. They take it in turns. And each one of these songs is very long. And as a rule, they don't have any musical accompaniment. So it's just them, either a group or 1 or 2 people, going up and singing their song. So everyone else is very silent, just enjoying the music. Yeah. Now, here's the thing. It has gained a little bit of popularity again in modern days, but, are you ready? They don't have the services in the middle of the night. Yeah, they tend to have them. I looked and there's a calendar, there's a website called Pelagian.com, I think it was called, and they had a calendar of all the services that you could go and watch, and they run all the way from the start of December, pretty much till the end of January. It's like a bell curve, you know, so most of them are around December, and they tend to be in the afternoon or in the evening. Yeah, so they're not even in the like night time waiting for the sun to come up, apart from the ones held on Christmas Day. And on Christmas Day they tend to be at about 6 o'clock or 7 o'clock, so still pretty early, still pretty blooming early. Yeah, so there you go, kids. I'll tell you what, let me play a little bit of Pelagian singing for you. Have a listen to this, see what you think of it.
Ar gyfer heddiw'r bore'r baban bach yn baban bach y ganwyd gwreiddyn jesen baban bach y cadarn ddaeth o bosra y deddfwr gynt ar seina yr iawn gaid ar galfarian baban bach yn baban bach yn signo bron marian baban bach.
Like I said at the start, these songs are sung in Welsh, so if you want to know what they're about, it's probably best if you speak Welsh. Yeah, because when you're in a church, they tend not to run subtitles, sadly. Not in churches, not in my experience. Yeah. So that is a Pelagian singing. Now, Here's a question for you. If the service in the old days used to start at 3 o'clock in the morning, what do you do beforehand? Do you go to bed on Christmas Eve and then get up at 3 in the morning? Or just stay up all night? Thing is, it's Christmas Eve. You're going to be out having a beer anyway, aren't you? I'd imagine. You're going to want to have a drink. So people would be up quite late. And it's like 11 o'clock. You think, oh, I'll just have a nap. I'll just rest my eyelids for a bit. And then you have a lay down. And then it come 3 o'clock, your wife comes to wake you up. Come on, we're going to church. You're like, bollocks to that, honey. No, I'm staying here. Leave me alone. You're in a drunken stupor at that stage, aren't you? You know, yeah, it's pointless. Forget it. So you've got to stay up all the way through. Do you know what they do? Families would hold parties with singing, games, and they do decorating and stuff, and storytelling, and, are you ready? They would make toffee. Yeah, it's true. They'd make toffee. And this was called Noson Gifleth, which means toffee evening. And what they do is they boil up the ingredients for the toffee, and then you pour it out onto a stone slab, or on the hearth people used to use if they didn't have a stone slab. And then you cover your hands with butter, like that. That's me covering my hands with butter. Can you hear that? Yeah, that's me covering my hands with butter. And then you start pulling it. And when you pull the toffee, it's hard to explain if you haven't seen it before. I'm trying to think of what an example of it is. Imagine you've got some chewing gum and you're pulling it out of your mouth. It's a bit like that, but not quite the same. So you start pulling this toffee and you twist it and stretch it as it would go. And it starts to change colour from the dark brown when it's first poured to more of a golden yellow. And the texture of it changes to like a softer and more chewy texture. And then like you'd have strips of it or twists of it and you'd cut it up into smaller sections and then you'd eat it. Delicious. I did read on one of them, only one I read this though, but when you're cooking it up, the way you find out if the toffee's cooked, because you have to cook toffee for a long, long time, boil it for ages. The way you test if it's ready is you put a drop of it in water, and if it forms the right shape, like if it goes into a ball, I think, a hard ball, a soft ball, then you know it's ready to pour. But what you'd used to do is they'd get a small bit of toffee, drop it in the water, and the shape that the toffee would take would spell out the initials of your true love. Possibly. So I was reading all about this and I found a couple of recipes for it. Have a listen to this. Are you ready? Right. This is the first one. I'm going to give you two recipes because they're quite different. So you need 2 pounds of black treacle, 2 pounds of golden syrup, 2 pounds of granulated sugar, 1 pound of butter and a defibrillator. Because you're likely to have a heart attack after eating all that. Goodness me. You know, treacle and syrup are pretty much just sugar anyway. They're just liquid sugar. So that's pretty much 6 pounds of sugar and 1 pound of butter. Really? Gracious. And then I found another recipe, which is a bit healthier, actually. This one just contained brown sugar, instead of all the syrups and treacle, butter, and then, are you ready? Lemon juice. Yeah, a little bit of lemon juice in there. So there you go. One of your 5 a day. Got your healthy option in there. And then water. Yeah. And that's how you make it, kids. Boil it for ages and ages and ages. Then when you think it's ready, pour it out and pull it. And that's what they do. And then once they'd finished with their toffee and their games and that, they'd eat the toffee and head on down to their Plygian to sing their carols. Now, like I said, the Plygian thing is still going, even though they've changed the times of when they have the services. I couldn't really see if the old Noson Gifleth or toffee evening was still going. I don't imagine it is, or if it is, it wouldn't be the same thing, because in the old days you'd be staying up all night to go to the service, whereas now the service is a lot later, so you don't have to stay up all night for it. So yeah, there you go. But I thought that was a nice one. I like the idea of that, making a bit of toffee and having a party with the family before going to church in the morning. There we go, boys and girls. Now we're going to do this. Boys and girls, usually I recommend a podcast or sometimes a TV show. Well, today I'm recommending an audiobook. Now, I'm signed up to Audible. I don't pay monthly. I bought like a dozen credits for half price a while ago. I've only used one of them. Yeah, I don't listen to many audiobooks, but the first one I've listened to is called The Beatles All These Years, Part 1, Tune In by Mark Lewisohn. And I've got to say, boys and girls, I've always been a fan of the Beatles. Not a huge fan, you know, I've always liked their music, but I never really got into like the history and everything of them. And I thought, do you know what, why don't I learn a bit about them? Now, this series of books this guy's written, he's only written the first part, and it took him years. He's writing the second part. It's going to be in 3 parts. He's writing the second part at the moment, but it's still a good 2 or 3 years down the line before it's going to come out. Now, this book is 48 hours long. And the first sort of 4 or 5 hours talks about the Beatles when they were growing up and then when they started to meet. And it ends when they just get famous in the UK. And I haven't quite finished it yet. I've still got another 7 hours left on the book. But I'm loving it. I really am. And what a bargain that is. I've used one credit from my Audible account and I've got nearly 50 hours of material. And I've learnt so much about the Beatles. And the only sad bit is that part two isn't out yet because I really want to carry on listening to it. I really am enjoying it. If you've got an interest in the Beatles, I think you could really learn a lot from this book. And if you're not a fan of the Beatles, well, maybe check this out and you will become a fan, because they were a great band. Got to be the greatest band of all time, I guess, really. So yeah, that's my recommendation, kids. The Beatles, All These Years, Part 1, Tune In, by Mark Lewisohn. I think you'll get a kick out of it. And that is it for this episode. A little bit shorter than normal because I'm away. Yeah, I hope you've enjoyed it. Don't forget to send me your scores for the quiz. The email is totalchristmas@gmail.com. The website is totalchristmaspodcast.com. I want to say a big thank you to Bob Baker for sending in his segments. I'll be back again in 2 weeks' time. In the meantime, you know I love you. Merry, happy Christmas.
What about the reindeer? Have you ever seen a reindeer fly?
Yes.
Well, I haven't.
Have you ever seen $1 million?
No.
Just because you haven't seen it doesn't mean it doesn't exist.